Welcome to Full Trade Monday. Coming to this tracy recording at 3:13 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is October 12th. Well, I thought we'd kick off with the 2-year yield because it was down 27 basis points today. Now, the Bank of England is in an exceptionally difficult position, and they're assailed on all sides by different kinds of problems. And the problem in the pension market is an immediate concern. The problem with inflation, despite the fact that CPI has been printing north of 9% on consecutive months, I think for 5 consecutive months, is a present problem, but it's also a future problem. And what they do today isn't going to matter in the minutia. Obviously, what they do is aimed eventually at getting inflation under control, but it's not an immediate concern. So what's interesting is that the 2-year is also contracting. We saw that the 30-year got all the way up to test the 5% level in here today. And this tested the resolve of the Bank of England. And this was quite predictable. It's generally what we see after a major intervention. The market is willing to test the resolve of the central bank or the government that is trying to sway the trend. So yields got up to 5%, and this really is a case of the Bank of England saying to the market, do as I say, not as I do. Governor Andrew Bailey came out last night and said, you've only got 3 days left. You're going to have to get everything in order, or I'm taking away all the money. And the pension sector went into conniptions and the pound sold off. But then cooler heads got control and basically concluded that there isn't a prayer that the Bank of England can remove the accommodation, that it's going to take significantly longer than a week to unwind the leverage within the pension system. We're already starting to see these pensions asking the companies that they represent to fund them. So this is going to be a significant draw on the various companies. But the Bank of England is in this position where they had to expand what kind of assets they're willing to buy on Monday. So they started buying corporate bonds. Then yesterday they started buying inflation protected bonds. And in here today they were buying more gilts and more long end bonds. And of course, the move that we had in the 2-year is more implying that that we're approaching the end of the hiking cycle for the Bank of England, that they're going to be inhibited from doing their jobs. Or at least they're going to be inhibited from doing their jobs until some of the leverage is squeezed out of the pension system. So this is obviously problematic. And it's not like it's been a secret that the pensions have been leveraging up. But it's an acute failure of governance. The regulatory environment in the UK is such that it really is just a virtue signalling, box-ticking exercise and doesn't really get to the heart of where risks reside within the system. So the cost of compliance has gone up, and there's an awful lot of busy work goes on, but no real substantive effort to control where the speculation tends to accumulate. And that's what we're living through now, is the repercussions of that. I really still think of it as it's almost like a practice in dark humor that the Nobel Prize was given to Ben Bernanke for his quantitative easing program, because we're now living through the repercussions of that. I was thinking over last night about this fund manager speed dating conference I was at in 2019. It's one of these Marcus Evans conferences where they invite investors along to get pitched to by alternative asset managers. And whatever about the kinds of assets that were being pitched to me, which were software companies, timber companies, real estate investments. But it's One of the conversations I had with one of the other delegates is the thing that I remember most. And he was a portfolio manager at PIMCO. And one of his clients offered him $200 million to invest in private equity. And he didn't know the first thing about private equity and private assets. So he went along to this conference to learn something about it. And that was the time when there was a free-for-all in terms of investing in private assets because the valuations were leaping higher. And I remember thinking at the time that this is really bubbly. But then we had the pandemic and we had the big decline, and then we had money printing on an epic scale. And the valuations that private assets were commanding in 2021 made what was going on in 2019 look tame. So this is the other side of the argument. Every pension ran into problems after 2008 because they were looking for returns of 8%. And in fact, over the course of the last decade, they've been at public pensions in the US have actually been reducing their expected returns, and they're down to about 7.25%. But when bond yields are a lot closer to 1%, then that's just not going to get the job done. So they had to invest in more equity and more alternative assets. So the beauty of alternative assets is that many of them are income producing. And they have the long life assets. So a big office building, a warehouse, standing timber, or private businesses that throw off a lot of cash flow. These are the kinds of assets that alternative managers tend to own. So they have unique characteristics that are attractive to long-term investors like pension funds or endowments. But the drawback is that they are illiquid. They can't simply be sold instantly. And one of the big issues that arose in the aftermath of the credit crisis, or I guess it was during the credit crisis, was mark-to-market. That properties were getting sold, then the comps were marked down, then that was leading to assets on balance sheet being marked down to the prevailing market price. So then balance sheets were contracting in real time based upon one or two data points. And there was a lot of mismatch and a lot of misallocations of where pricing was actually accurate. But it contributed to the crash. There's a real possibility that that's the kind of issue that will assail the US bond market. Because instead of, and I think that UK pensions have also been investing in alternative assets, but they've been much more involved in leverage. Now, the standing repo facility in the USA makes the guarantee of unlimited liquidity available. So that's, I think, something that would prohibit the kind of problem that is happening in the UK from happening in the USA immediately. But mark to market is something that could have a really significant issue for the pension sector in the USA. And alternative assets represent much larger weightings in pensions in the US. So it was the alternative asset class is how they got over the issue with low interest rates in the USA, and leverage is how they solved it in the UK. So every pension has had the same problem. Not every pension industry around the world has tackled it in the same way, but the problem is the same. They've all had to take on more risk because the available returns were simply not available. And when investors talked about savers being robbed by the quantitative easing program and it being a massive transfer of wealth from savers to speculators. Well, this is what it means. It's that it forced savers to become speculators. This is true of retail investors. It's true of portfolio managers, where the predominance of what are, in fact, closet trackers, ETFs, passive investors, that because of the market cap weighting of indices, mean that passive investors and those that wish to track an index, so the closet trackers, well, then what they're in fact is engaged in is momentum trading, because as you're buying the index, you're inflating the prices of the largest companies. And that effectively turns fundamental value investors into momentum investors, or savers into speculators. And that's been the characteristic of the entire bull market that we've had since 2009. So 10-year yields were down a little in here today following the Federal Reserve minutes and pausing around the 4% level. So there is still some speculation about just how high can interest rates go, and will the bank or will the excuse me the Federal Reserve are they going to slow down the pace of interest rate hikes after November? Well, they don't have a lot of reason to do that. PPI figures today came out ahead of expectations. Now, they didn't rise, but they didn't fall as much as the market was anticipating. We're going to have CPI figures tomorrow. There's a good chance it'll be pretty similar. So, but because there's the calibration question about how flexible should the Federal Reserve be? Well, they will be flexible when they start to see inflationary pressures moderating, but we haven't seen that yet. So I don't think this is anything other than a pause in the region of the peaks. Now, the dollar index had been in positive territory in early trading and then finished out the day pretty much unchanged. So still, we have this question about whether the interest rate differential is going to continue to widen in favor of the dollar. The dollar has been surging for the last 20 months or 22 months. It bottomed in early 2021. And when we look at the performance of the dollar over the last year, well, or in fact, since the dollar index bottomed, which was in January of 2021, there's only two currencies who have been stronger than it. But most particularly, the yen has been among the weakest and down 28%. And with the yen, we have another example of how the market is testing the resolve of the government in this case. So at the end of September, we had that big day with the long tails. And that was when the government intervened to try and support the currency, but got no support from the central bank. And then you had Kuroda, the governor of the Bank of Japan, coming out today saying that they're still wedded to their quantitative easing program. So the yen moved to another new low. And this is an extension of the dollar's uptrend. So while the euro was reasonably steady and the pound was in positive territory because the bond market is not going to be allowed to collapse, the yen continues to deteriorate. And this is a really meaningful breakout. So Japan is desperate to get inflation. And now we're seeing the yen strengthening through the lows from 1998. So this is a very meaningful depreciation in the currency. And it has the real potential that it's going to break out of this long base formation, which has been forming for 30 years. We could see a meaningful depreciation in the currency, despite the fact that we have the short-term oversold condition. Now, when we think about short-term oversold conditions, I was looking at some of the renewable energy and utility companies in Europe. So Red Eléctrica is accelerating lower, and it was in negative territory again in here today. But the more back history we look at, the worse it looks, because it looks like a completing type 3 top formation. It's been ranging for 7 years, and now it's deteriorating. Russia is waging an energy war on Europe, and at the moment they're still sending gas via pipeline through Ukraine and Turkey, and the pipeline going through Poland sprang a leak. So there's sometimes you can put down an odd event to a coincidence, but coincidences don't happen every day. The bombing of the Nord Stream 1 pipeline, the sabotage of the German rail network, where two signal boxes were sabotaged 200 miles apart or 200 kilometers apart, and acute knowledge of the system would be required to conduct that kind of sabotage. And of course, we have the Nord Stream pipeline blowing up as well. So infrastructure in Europe is under threat and is being attacked. Now, they're not being hit by cruise missiles, but these are attacks nonetheless, and they're inconvenient, but most importantly, they're also expensive. And then we can think about the bond yield. So Spanish bond yields are up to 3.5%. But then we can also think about the spreads. So the spread's up to 120 basis points over bunds. Now it hasn't quite yet broken out of this base formation. So what this is really saying is that this isn't particularly a problem in Spain, it's a problem everywhere, and that this is a pan-European problem. Of course, Italy is the country with by far the most debt, and yields there are up to 4.75%, so quite a bit higher than we see in Spain. And obviously, you have a new government there as well. So we have a much more volatile chart pattern on the spread. But one thing that I thought was interesting today is that when we look at the Turkish, and let me see if I can find that. I'm afraid Bloomberg has been miss in. They used to have a whole page for their generics, and now they just don't. They're not on there anymore. So I was correct, and it just doesn't even know that it still has it itself. So the government bond yield in Turkey is up to about 10.9%. But this is high, and there's no question about that. And this is a US dollar denominated bond, but it's not as high as it was in 2008, and it's certainly not as high as it was back in 2003. Spread over treasuries, it's more or less in the region of the upper side of the long range. So this is suggesting that yes, Turkey has lots of problems, but that it's also got some unique geopolitical significance, which could be a benefit to it, in that it controls the Bosphorus and it's the terminus for one of the pipelines that comes out of Russia. So it could turn into a gas trading hub. Now, of course, that's a NATO country that's contravening some of the prohibitions against trading with Russia, and Turkey will probably be of the opinion, what are you going to do about it? And the answer is probably not much, because there is absolutely no way that NATO can afford to lose Turkey and its the importance of its geopolitical position at the head of the Bosphorus. So Turkey could potentially benefit, and I think that is why bond yields haven't really surged higher despite stress being exposed just about everywhere else. Now, when we think about the UK, well, obviously we have the issue with the pension sector, but the stock market is also selling off, and the FTSE 250 was at a new low in here today. So pressure is coming to bear on companies because of the slowing economy, because of tightening monetary conditions, the impending recession, and then the potential that some of these companies are also going to have to fork out a lot more money for their respective pensions because the pensions are broke. Then let's think about the NASDAQ. Well, it's still in the region of the new low and closing out the day in mildly negative territory. Now, we do have a short-term oversold condition, but I think the most important thing here is that we are below the 1,000-day moving average for the first time in at least 12 years. So this is a major trend inconsistency, and we have to start thinking about the end of the secular bull market for the Fang Man plus Tesla companies, because this trend is almost identical. If we just take those eight companies, it looks almost identical to the NASDAQ 100. Now, if we just look at one, just those eight companies relative to the entire market, well, then this looks like a type 3 top formation, and that it's going to break downwards. So obviously, we've had a lot of valuation contraction already. You can't have but have valuation contraction when prices fall this much. Of course, we haven't yet seen earnings roll over, and the ARK Innovation ETF is right back on the region of its lows. But a number of those more speculative type companies did steady in here today. But I think that that is a little bit vainglorious, that people seem to be willing to tell the market what to do, because our experience for the last 14 years is that every time there's been trouble, the Fed has rolled to the rescue. And they've been saying in plain English that they're not going to do it this time. And yet, investors are still willing to buy the dip. But the end of a bull market is when buying the dip doesn't work. And at the moment, buying the dip is not working. So we have to be ready for the real possibility that this secular bull market is over and that we're going to see new bull markets evolve in other sectors, but perhaps not in those eight companies and not in the semiconductors sector. Now, it could be biotech, it could be resources. And I saw in here today that the Biden administration have said that some of the lithium battery manufacturers are using child labor. Well, that's likely, I think the only way to conclude is that that is protectionist. It's not like they've been setting up new battery factories all of a sudden, but simply that a lot of the cobalt in the world comes from some really dodgy areas in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and the world is willing to look past all of that because they need the exports. But realistically, what it's really about is trying to contain China. And this is an additional thread that there are going to have to be some significant investments in new construction of mining, and nobody wants to have a new mine next to them. So there's only a very small number of countries in the world willing to do mining, and Saudi Arabia is one of those. And but aren't they're not going to be too keen about exporting raw materials to the rest of the world. They're much more interested in building the manufacturing capacity themselves, and that's certainly their prerogative. But then you can think about all of the car companies where they want to build lots of electric vehicles, and they're doing deals with mines to buy resources directly. This is a very clear change of tack, whereas previously companies did not want to own manufacturing capacity. They didn't want to own commodity trading. They didn't want to have access to raw materials or the risks attached to mining. Now they're more concerned about security of supply. They're buying their resources directly. They're investing in processing. They're trying to contain their costs. And this is a very different type of company that's evolving, where they're going to be very capital heavy. But that's completely different to the kind of market that we've had for the last decade, which has been about intangible assets. What it's looking increasingly likely is that we're going to see much more interest in capital infrastructure and real world applications in order to deal with what are effectively wars going on which are basically between freedom and autocracies. And this isn't something that's going to simply play out over a day or two, but that we could be looking at this kind of evolution in the market for a decade. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.